Welcome to An Epiphany with Tiffany. My name is Tiffany, and I've just had an epiphany. This podcast is all about Christian singles looking for community. Christian dating can be quite a mess these days. I'll share stories from my guests and practical tips for successful love. Dating shouldn't be this hard, right? So grab your favorite snack or drink and curl up with this episode, and you might just have an epiphany of your own.
Yeah. Well, thanks for letting me be part of it.
Yeah, thank you for joining it.
Yeah. I guess maybe one good place to start would just be like a little bit of my story and where and how I ended up where I'm at, because that plays into a lot of my answers, right?
Yeah, it definitely does.
So I am 40. I'm single, been single pretty much my whole life, which is hard to say, but and I guess it depends on your definition of single. I've dated, but I've not been in like serious relationships long term. So and it is like the thing that has been my deepest longing since I was young, since I was a teenager, really. My story is interesting in that one of your questions touched on the purity culture. And how that has affected people. We don't need to talk about purity culture the whole time because that's a huge topic. Yes. But one of the things that really somehow got ingrained in me early on was the idea that I had to wait for the guy to be the one to make the first move. And I had to, I didn't want to lead guys on. And what that translated into was this idea that like, I didn't even know what it was like to make eye contact with a guy. It was like, if I make eye contact with a man that I think is attractive, then he's going to know right away that I think he's attractive. And then where is that going to lead us? And so I was just the awkward girl in high school, and I was kind of the awkward girl in college. And it was at the end of college that God started the process of opening my eyes to that. I had 5 conversations in 1 week where all of them said the same thing. And it was, you're not open to guys. You're not exactly laying out the welcome mat here. You make it seem like you are not interested. And I'm like, but this is the deepest longing of my heart. How can you not see that I'm interested? And it all culminated with a conversation with my mom where I was like pouring my heart out to her about this and saying like, why are people saying that I'm not open? And she's like, you kind of remind me of that scene from the movie Hitch where, she's in the bar. It's when they first meet. And he says to her, after she's just like turned down the one awful guy, he says to her, you're giving all the right signals. You're like, your heels are under 2 inches. You've got your hair pulled back tight. You're drinking a beer. You have a martini because a beer wouldn't do. Like he just goes into this whole thing, right? About she's giving all the right signals to say, I'm unavailable. And then he says, and if that's not enough, you've got the F off stamped on your forehead.
Yep.
And my dear mother, who I love immensely, says, you've got F off stamped on your forehead. Mm. Like you are putting out this vibe that you don't need a man, that you don't want a man, that you, you're not laying out the welcome mat. And I'm like, oh, okay, what does that mean?
Right.
And so it's been like 20 years of me learning what that looks like, learning how to make eye contact with the man and not have it be this scandalous thing, but actually just a really good interaction, and learning how to, just interact with men in a healthy way. In the world of dating, especially, just in general, but like in the world of dating, I think we do have a whole generation of people who are affected one way or another by that purity culture movement, which I feel like I should say for the record, I think that the the intention of that movement was so good. Mm-hmm. And I think Satan just used that to attack an entire generation of believers into not knowing how to relate with each other. Mm-hmm. And now we have an entire generation of 30s and 40s who are unmarried and longing to be married and don't know how to interact with each other. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard. So it's really been in the last few years that I feel like God has really done some things in me and freed me up in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. even more so. And I think you know that I started hosting speed dating events. Mm-hmm. And that's been huge. That's been huge for me. Speed dating, going to speed dating events, and just realizing like, you're allowed to have a conversation with the man. You're allowed to go on a date with a man. And heaven forfend, you could even kiss a man. And like, and that doesn't mean that it has to be the thing that is the end all be all. And once you're there, then you're committed. And we just put way, way, way too much pressure on these initial stages of relating to each other. And you don't want to mess it up. And so then you just don't try. People just don't try. So mm-hmm. It's been cool to do those events and try to encourage other people in the ways that I've been learning and growing. going on a date is not a marriage proposal. Like right. Going on a date is figuring out if you want to go on a second date. Mm-hmm. And then going on the second date is figuring out if you want to go on a third date. Like, you don't have to put all this pressure on it. And when the pressure comes off, actually dating becomes so fun. Mm-hmm. It's so fun just to get to know somebody. And maybe you figure out that they're not the right fit for you, but you learn some things about yourself along the way. You might figure out some things that are the right fit for you. And all of that is huge in, in our growth as singles. So.
Yes, I agree. I want to come to one of your events, by the way. But I don't, when are you having your next one? Side note.
It's not scheduled yet.
So. Oh, okay. Well, keep me posted.
I will. Okay.
I'll bring the girls and yeah. we'll make it a mafia thing. That would be so cool. Hey, actually, that would be fun. We should do that. We'll talk after.
Okay.
So while you were talking, I just kind of got this like thought and I want to get your opinion on it. Yeah. So, cause we hear a lot of the time you need to be intentional. You know, you need to be intentional. You need to let your intentions be known. And I don't think that's a bad thing, but I'm wondering if like sometimes when we say like, oh yeah, obviously our intention in dating is to get married because that's the intention, right? Does that in and of itself put too much pressure at the beginning? You get what I'm saying?
Yes. And yeah. So I will say for someone like me who is affected by that culture in such a way that, you know, that I kiss dating goodbye, the like, mm-hmm. Like there's so much intentionality that really a first date feels like I have to know if this person is marriage material before I'm willing to go on a date with him, because I'm not going to just waste my time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, wait, yes, the intention is marriage, but how do you know if this person is marriage material unless you get to know them? And sure, when you're in high school, when you're in college and you're doing life with people that are all in the same stage of life as you, you can get to know somebody in group contexts and, mm-hmm. You know, the youth group or the college ministry or whatever, you get to know each other. And so then you do get to know that person. And then by the time you're ready to date them, you figured out that this person is a marriage material person. Right.
Right.
But the older you get, the more that your life is spread out and the more that you're not necessarily running in circles with people who are all in the same stage of life as you. And so how do you get to know somebody to get to know if they're marriage material, unless you're willing to go on a date with them? And I think I think there should be great intentionality in dating toward marriage. I don't think that dating should be something that you just like, I think it's okay to date for fun. But date for fun with some intention to start to learn about yourself, to start to learn about other people, and with the intention of hopefully long-term marriage. But if you go into a first date with that in mind, like, is this a person I could marry? That's what puts the pressure on it. And that's what makes it feel like an interview. So it makes it feel like, you know, does this person check my most important boxes for a husband? Mm-hmm. Well, then it's an interview. Then it's like what does your walk with God look like? And who wants, like, if that doesn't naturally come up in conversation, then it feels like, wait, you're not actually interested in me. Mm. You're interested in, do I fit your profile? Mm-hmm. And so I guess as I've gotten older, I've been way more willing to not flippantly approach dating, but going on a date with somebody that I'm like, I'm not sure if he's a believer or not, but I'm going to go and I'm going to get to know him and figure out a little bit about who he is. And if we can talk about our faith journeys, not with me having the intention of, do you check my box? But with me having the intention of, can I get to know this man? that releases so much pressure. And then it is fun. And then, you know, you figure out that actually this person's not serious about their faith. And we don't need to go on another date. But like, if you are so closed to the idea of like, I have to only go on dates with someone who is marriage material, then you're shooting yourself in the foot, you know?
Yeah.
How are you supposed to figure that out?
I've had to, it's funny as you're talking again, I'm like, oh yeah, I did that wrong recently. Well, not wrong, but I like, oh yeah, I stepped right back into that thought pattern from purity culture, you know, with like this most recent talking situation I was in. But it's still, this is another reason why I'm loving these conversations. Cause I'm like, oh yeah. See, different perspective, you know, but the point of bringing that up, that talking situation, you know, it was like long distance. So it was like that situation of like, how do we figure out if we even want to meet in person, you know? So like long distance obviously brings up a different aspect to when those types of questions come up.
Yes.
You know, and you made like a really good point in your response to how much do you consider cost question, like with dating, because you even talked about like long distance, you know, what is, if this situation is long distance, then obviously that takes a different financial need as far as like meeting. Right. And then, but if somebody's like in person, you know, or more local, then you know, that looks a little differently as far as like cost. So anyway, I don't know if you have any other thoughts about that particular topic also, but yeah, like, I don't know. I think we make dating too hard, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's true. It should be fun. And it should be like, I for sure am one who tends to think way too much about the future, way too much about, like, I'm a planner. I want to know how things are going to go. It's hard for me. Like, the moment I start talking to somebody that I think is interesting, of course I'm thinking about last names. I'm thinking about where are we living. Of course I'm thinking like all these things, and you go, okay, wait, hold back a second here. Because actually, you miss the present. You miss what's right in front of you if you're so focused on like jumping three steps ahead. And that's been a huge thing that I feel like the Lord has really been impressing upon me in a lot of life, not just dating, but I, a few years ago, holidays are always hard, right?
Yes.
As a single person. My family, everybody's married, everybody has kids. I'm the only single one going back, you know, to do the family holiday thing is hard. Not to mention all the Christmas songs, all the best Christmas songs are like cozying up to the one that you love, right? Mm-hmm. Like, here I am, single, real cold.
Yes.
So holidays have always been hard. And so it was approaching and I was feeling sorry for myself. Mm-hmm. And I felt like in one of my times with the Lord, I felt like I heard him say, life will not always look this way. Mm. And it was like, wait, what does that mean? Of course, I immediately go to like, wait, does that mean that this is going to be my last Christmas single? Mm. That's not what he said. He said, life won't always look this way. So be present to what I have for you in this moment. Mm-hmm. Don't miss what I'm doing in your life right now, because you're hoping that this will be your last Christmas as a single person. And that was a few years ago. I've had a couple more single Christmases since. But that Christmas was one of the most, like, I enjoyed it the most. And I, on Christmas morning, was with my whole family watching my nieces and nephews go crazy with all their Christmas gifts. And I'm sitting there in this room and I look around and my grandmother, who was 98 at the time, is mm-hmm. sitting there. And I thought, life won't always look this way. These kids won't always be this young and fun and excited to spend time with their extended family. My grandma is 98. She's not going to be around forever. Mm-hmm. Getting to do life like this with my family, life won't always look this way. And it struck this chord with me that has really resonated since then, these last couple few years. It's like whenever I start to get frustrated with my singleness, mm-hmm. and it's like, Lord, come on. And I just hear him say, life won't always look this way. So be present to what I have for you right now. And when I am willing to focus on what he has for me right now, whether it's there's not even a prospect in sight, I have no one I'm talking to, or I have somebody that I'm very interested in and things seem to be going well, like either way, be present in that moment. And so, yeah, I think, where did we start with that? I don't remember what your question was. I'm sorry.
Okay. That is the way that this conversation is supposed to go. We kind of started talking about like putting too much pressure on dating and then like, you know, making dating too hard. And, you know, we talked about a little bit about long distance and like stuff like that. But yeah, that's pretty much where we started was putting too much pressure on
data. One thing about long distance that I mm-hmm. will say is, oh, I think this is where I was starting. I can get way ahead of myself, right?
Right.
And so when you're long distance and you're talking to somebody and you're talking on the phone and you're texting and you're maybe FaceTiming and you're connecting with each other, but you're not in person. And so you can always kind of put on a specific self for an hour long, 2 hour, 3 hour long phone conversation that you can't necessarily keep when you're in person, mm-hmm. right? And I, a while back, I made the mistake of getting very, very emotionally drawn in this long distance connection. We talked on the phone a lot. We actually didn't FaceTime a whole lot. We FaceTimed a little bit, but mostly it was just talking on the phone and emails. And the man was so good with his words. He was such an amazing writer. And he drew me in and I was like so much further along in my heart than I probably needed to, and I should have been before having even met him in person. And when he came and visited, it was several months in before we actually ever met in person. And within the first hour of being in each other's presence, I was like, I don't know that this is actually a good fit. Mm. And we spent the whole weekend. He came and he stayed and stayed with some friends of mine, and he got to meet a bunch of my friends in my community. And I'm watching him interact with my community, and we're interacting, and I'm finding out all sorts of quirks about him, which we're like, you want to keep an open mind about quirks, but it was just the whole weekend was, it felt very clear. I just had this sinking feeling in my stomach. Like, this is not a good fit, but it felt like a really, really bad breakup. Because I had let myself get so emotionally drawn in before meeting him. Mm-hmm. And so I now, in the times that I've had the opportunity to start to get to know somebody long distance, I am way more like, let's figure out a way to meet early. I know it seems early for long distance a few weeks in, but like, I don't know who you are. I need to be around you. Yeah. And depending on where you live and whatever, like, let's meet somewhere in the middle for a day. It's an expensive day. I get it. Air travel is no longer what it used to be.
Yep.
Or, figuring out me coming to you, you coming to me. Let's figure out a way to meet earlier because I don't want to do that again where I get so drawn in emotionally. There's this emotional intimacy that then can't be backed up when you're in person and you go, oh, I was falling for the idea of this guy and the man himself is not the right fit for. So it's that whole thing about the cost of like who I expect. I feel for guys in this, like dating these days, a guy paying for every first date that he goes on or every first 2-3 dates that he goes on, like that's an expensive endeavor. And if a guy is serious about wanting to meet somebody, then he's probably going on a lot of dates. And so I love it when a man says, especially at the beginning of a date, when he makes it very clear, like, oh, this is on me. Like I was raised this way or whatever. I've had guys say lots of different things, but when they say like, I will not let you be paying for dinner or whatever it is, I love that. Mm-hmm. And I never expect it. And I always offer to pay my half because it's a date. Let's go to a taco shop. I can pay for my tacos, Southern California thing.
Yep.
When it comes to the long distance thing and meeting in person, that is a huge investment to make. Mm-hmm. And I for sure am like, I will pay my way if we're meeting halfway through, halfway in the middle, or if I'm coming to you, I'm paying my way to get to you. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to take me out on some nice dates, then that'd be great while I'm there, but I feel like in times past, that idea of a man having it always paying for the date, like it's chivalrous and it's amazing. And I think that was the expectation. And I think it's really hard on guys in the current dating culture to have that always be the expectation. Mm-hmm. So I try really hard not to put that pressure on them, as much as I love it when they do offer. they score some immediate bonus points when they do.
Same. For me, I'm just like, it doesn't have to be a big thing. Obviously, taking long distance out of it, like if it's a local thing, let's go get tacos, let's go to coffee, let's drive to the beach because we're in California, like we have a bunch of beaches to pick from
and a bunch of amazing coffee shops nearby. Go get a coffee, walk on the beach. It's a great date.
That, like, I am a let's sit down and talk person, right? Because that's the only way I'm going to get to know you. I am huge on body language, and quirks, obviously, but like, how else do you expect to meet somebody if you're not making it simple, I guess, is like the way that, everybody's more comfortable when it's not something, crazy fancy for like a first date, or, just pick something easy. Figure out what she likes and or what you both like to do, and then go do that, because chances are you're going to have more fun doing the thing that you both like to do than, spending a ton of money on a huge steak or something like that.
Yeah. Save that for later.
like special occasions after you guys have been dating like a year. Okay. Yeah. Let's go get the steak now.
Yeah.
Such a great perspective though. It's just like, you don't, it doesn't have to be a pressured filled thing, but yes, we understand that guys do feel that pressure, especially with the culture today. So,
yeah. Well, it's like this, it's this dating today. It's just so weird because there's the dating culture today, and then there's the Christian dating subculture. Mm. And there are a lot of things that Christians do well. And I'm going to say that Christians don't do dating in their 30s and 40s well at all. I've seen it actually in a few of these Facebook groups. I've seen some women make comments like, why is it that I feel like I'm treated better by non-Christian men on dates than I am by Christian men?
Mm-hmm.
And I want to give our Christian men the benefit of the doubt because we've made it really, really hard on them.
Yes.
I don't think it's all their fault. but we do kind of need to change some of that conversation, change some of the culture around it, take some of that pressure off, because for both us, men and women, we're doing ourselves a disservice by making it be the most intense thing, and you have to get it right. And it's like, you know what? We're adults. We're human beings. We're probably going to hurt each other's feelings at some point. Mm-hmm. But let's just be open in communication. Mm-hmm. And if I express interest and you're not interested, that's okay. Like, let's just, it's hard. It doesn't feel good. It's uncomfortable. Those are awkward conversations, but have the conversation and treat each other with respect. And then it makes it a whole lot easier the next time around when you go, okay, I know that telling somebody that I am interested and being rejected, that didn't end me, right? Mm. So I can do it again, actually. I can try again. I think one of the questions said something about, do you prefer that men be the one to make the first move?
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of going back to my story, this is another one where I've learned a lot. And I think in the past, I would be like, of course he has to make the first move. Of course, I'm not calling him.
Right.
He's got to call me. I'm not going to be the first one to text. He's got to text me. And it's like, well, wait a second. What that again, suddenly puts all this pressure on the relationship. If a guy comes to mind and I want to send him a text, I'm going to send him a text. Let people talk about drop the hanky. It's not dropping the hanky so much as like, let me engage in this relationship in a way that expresses some interest, lays out the welcome mat, and then let him take it from there. Because I do think it's important for men to lead in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important for them to, I think that's God honoring when men take the initiative and lead. That, I think, was one of your questions too, right?
Yeah.
Of what that looks like.
Yes.
I'm like, you know what? Holding the door open for me, that's chivalrous, but that's not leading in a relationship.
Right. Right?
Like what I really want for a man to do is to be the one to be ahead of me in this process. And so I might express interest. You might be the first one to express interest. Great. Whatever. We've established interest. You ask me on a date and call it a date, right? Mm. If you want to go on another date with me, call it a second date. If you want to date me exclusively, like you lead us into that next phase of the relationship as I am responding to you and how you're leading. But to me, that's what it looks like for a man to lead in a dating relationship. And I think I said in my answer to, by the time you get to, oh, I think I want to marry this woman, which hasn't happened to me yet. But I sure would hope that you are seeking out spiritual counsel, like from your faithful mentors, advisors, the people in your life, that you are living life in community enough that that you're going, I think this is where I want to, I think this is what we, this is it.
Yeah.
And let people speak into that. And then you lead into that conversation with me. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to initiate. So we've been dating for 2 years. Are you ever going to pop the question? That, like, right? Like,
yeah.
No girl, no woman wants to be the one to, like, have to move to the next phase of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to be led into the next phase of the relationship. And I think that's part of what being a Christian man leading in a relationship looks like. So. But I'll drop the hanky. I'll say I'm interested. I'll even ask you out on a date to start the relationship going. And then if you don't take it from there, this is the hard part for us women. Mm. It's then I got to let it go. If I've laid out the welcome mat, I've dropped the hanky. I've been more explicit because all these men say, we don't pick up on your cues. And so we need a little bit more help. And so there've been a couple of times when I've been like, I would actually really like to go on a date with you. And I've been accepted on that and said, oh, me too. And hey, and then he takes it and he's like, how about this Saturday? And let me like plan it or whatever. And then I've also been rejected in that. I don't think that's where I'm at. And I don't want to go on it. Like, let's not do that. And that's hard. That's hard to be rejected. But it doesn't end you. It doesn't end me. It doesn't define my value or my worth as a woman who is worthy of being pursued.
Mm.
It just means that that wasn't the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can let that go, then I think that's healthy for both of us. It's the me trying to take the reins that I think is a sin pattern that we women often have,
mm-hmm.
where we are trying to make something happen that is not what God's asking. And it's like, would you just let him lead? Mm-hmm. Would you just like pull back a little bit and let me show you what I can do through this relationship? Trust me. Don't take control, because it never works out when you take control.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this weird, it's this interesting balance. I think when I was 20, if you had ever asked me, would you ever ask a guy out on a date? I'd be like, no, never. Of course he should be the one. And now I'm like, yeah, I would. I have. And it's okay. And some of the really good dates that I've been on have been me taking that first step, but then letting them lead after that. And it's just hard. But I'm learning. I'm growing.
That's the whole process of life.
Yep. Yep.
You made some good points. And like, brain, hang on. I thought of like three different things at once. And I'm like, wait, no, hang on. Bring it back in. No, I love it. I'm all for it. I rant all the time. So I had an interesting conversation yesterday about the letting go process, and it kind of came into the original sin as far as like, you know, how, yes, Eve ate the apple and guys like to blame us and say it's our fault. Right. And then, you know, Adam ate the apple after the fact and like all that stuff. So I'm sure you've heard all the different aspects of that conversation and how, you know, it's his fault, her fault, right? But anyway, this conversation about letting go led into that conversation about Adam and Eve. And in particular, where it says in Genesis that your desire will be for your husband, right? And then the women's like curse, air quoting there, is, you know, we're going to have struggles with childbirth. It's going to be painful. And every month I curse Eve. You know what I mean? But like, then there's the aspect of like what sin did for Adam's side of things, you know, and then how he's supposed to, quote, lord over us. I think I'm misphrasing that a little bit, but it's paraphrase. And, you know, so then in that moment, it just became a eternal struggle of who's going to lead and who's going to follow, right? Obviously, with the perfect plan, if sin had never entered the world, then I feel like, you know, that would have just been easy. We wouldn't, as women, be over here going, well, I want to take control of all these situations because of whatever, right? So I don't know if you have any like thoughts on that. You'll hear the rest of the conversation eventually. But yeah. That was just kind of like the gist of the conversation. So when you were talking, it just kind of brought that back up in my mind. So I don't know if you have any thoughts about it.
Yeah, I actually have lots of thoughts about that.
Yay!
It's interesting. Just this last weekend, I celebrated my 40th. It's a couple months late, but mm-hmm. I celebrated my 40th and I invited some friends and family for the long weekend, Labor Day weekend, right?
Right.
And I invited a couple that's in their 70s that I really value their walk with the Lord. And I said, okay, I'm entering the second half of my life and I would love for you to just share with us some things. And I kind of left it really open-ended, but it was like, you're walking with Jesus in the second half of your life. Like, how do we do that? And it was interesting because he's like, I have been thinking and praying about this for your birthday weekend. And I feel like the Lord is putting it on my heart that we need to talk about shame. And I was like, oh. We talked about Genesis 2 and 3. And we talked about how men and women were created and how men and women are image bearers. And the way that we bear God's image looks a little bit different. And it's amazing how we get to together portray who God is. And we talked about what happened with the fall and the shame that they felt. So the creation, right?
Right.
Adam. Mm-hmm. was created first, and Adam was created from what?
The dust of the earth.
The dust of the earth. Mm-hmm. And Adam was created where?
Oh, I'm like, had the garden already been made? No,
not.
It had not.
In the wild.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then what's the first thing God does with Adam after his creation?
Oh my gosh, my brain.
It's okay. He takes him to the garden.
The garden. Okay. Yes. Yes. Says,
okay. So now here's your domain, yes. basically, and rule over it. Right. And then he tells him to name the animals and like he puts him to work in the garden. Mm-hmm. So Adam was created in the wild and he was created from the earth and he was given a task cultivating the earth, right? From the earth for the earth.
Right.
Okay. So Eve, what was Eve created from?
A rib.
From Adam.
Yes.
And where was she created?
She was in the garden.
In the garden. And what was the first thing God did with her after she was created?
Brought her to Adam.
Brought her to the man. She was created from a man for a man because it was not good for Adam to be alone. She was created specifically to help reflect relationship, the relationship that the Trinity had. we bring that piece into the picture for Adam. And so how amazing is this that we were created so differently? Different purposes, right? And then sin enters the picture. And what is Adam's curse?
He shall, toil the land, but then it won't be fruitful, basically. Paraphrase.
Yeah, basically. So the thing that he was created for, to cultivate the earth, is now going to become really, really hard. Mm. And women, Eve, her thing was pain in childbirth and this strife in the relationship with her husband, this desire for her husband, which that word desire in Genesis 3, it's only used one other time in Genesis 4. And it's the word that with Cain, that God says, Cain, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you and you must master it. It's like this controlling, manipulative desire that sin has. So the thing that we were created for is relationship and to bring this picture of the Trinity into the human experience And it's the thing that's the very area that is really, really hard because sin entered the picture. Mm-hmm. So I think that whole, I think God's doing a redemption story, obviously.
Yeah.
He's been doing that since the garden. But I think it's helpful for me to recognize the way that men and women were created differently, and the way that sin, the thing that sin did, was target the very thing that we were created for. Mm. And so men have a really hard time feeling like they're enough, because everything that they try to build or do, it fails, and they don't think that they're enough, and they're not strong enough. And strength is one of the main things ways that they bear God's image.
Mm.
Women were created for relationship, and we struggle in relationship, and we want to manipulate, and we want to control relationship, and it's really hard. And the very thing that we were created for has been marred by sin. And Jesus enters into both of those things, right? Mm. Jesus says to so then as women, our like longing is, am I lovable? Am I worth loving? Am I worth pursuing? Right.
Mm.
Again, these things that sin makes you think. And I loved in this talk that he pointed out, you know, God comes into the garden after they've sinned, and he says, "Where are you?"
Mm.
Not because he doesn't know. He gave Adam a chance to fess up, right? And Adam says, "I was afraid because I was naked, and so I hid."
Yeah.
And the question God asks is, who told you that? Who told you that? And I think that's what he wants. He, like, when we say, oh, I'm not lovable, I'm 40 and single, so something must be wrong with me. Mm. And he says to me, who told you that? No, that's sin that is entering in. That is Satan planting the seeds of a lie that you are believing.
Mm.
Who told you that? Would you believe me when I say that you were created for relationship, and you bear my image in that, and you have so much to offer in relationship as a single woman at age 40? And, you know, maybe someday he'll let me get married. I hope so. I long for that. He hasn't taken away that longing, but I think he wants to meet me and redeem the sin that mars the thing that I was created for.
Mm.
I think he wants me to find that in him. And this question of, like, am I worthy of pursuit? Am I lovable? He's like, who told you you weren't? Are you not listening to me?
Yes.
I told you you are worthy of pursuit, and you are so lovable, so much so that I'm willing to sacrifice my son to you. Mm. Would you believe me? Would you believe me when I say that? And I think sometimes I do. And then sometimes that little seed of a lie grows, and
mm-hmm.
And I have to be reminded. And this weekend was a good one for me to be reminded and just to, like, ruminate on that question of, who told you that? And why mm-hmm. would you believe him instead of me? Like, why would you believe Satan and his lies instead of the God who created you, the God mm-hmm. who created you beautiful and naked and for relationship? Like, we are his image bearers, and mm. Satan would like nothing more than to hit us right in the core of what we were created for, so that we would stop bearing his image, so that we would stop showing the world who the God of the universe is mm-hmm. through us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I went on another rant.
It was amazing, though. Amen. I'm so glad that, like, I kind of let you remind me, because as you kept talking, I was like, see, this is what God wanted, because there was a reason that I remembered the conversation from yesterday. And so, yep, that was awesome. That was so good. I was sitting over here going, yep, Tiffany, mm-hmm. See, you needed to be reminded of all of this too. We really do. And again, like, it's just coming back to what lies we as Christian culture are allowing ourselves to believe. And yeah, I've had so many conversations over this past year with different female friends and guy friends and basically just calling that out of like, that's a lie straight from the enemy's mouth and you need to stop believing it. You know, and I'm telling myself that just as much as them, you know what I mean? So I just, yeah, I love that that's, oh, sorry, I couldn't hear you. What'd you say?
I'm sorry. Just, we have to remind each other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's just, it's great when you have that realization, you know, and then you have to accept it, obviously, and go, okay, yes, that is a lie. It's not the truth. But, you know, that's an everyday process sometimes.
It is. And I think we get down on ourselves about that too. And it's mm-hmm. like, wait, I thought I learned this lesson already, Lord. Can we move on to the next lesson? Right?
Yes.
Well, no, because actually, yes, you learned it. And I'm going to teach it to you again in a deeper way and a deeper way until the truth penetrates the deepest part of your mm-hmm. heart and you believe it with your heart and soul mm-hmm. about who I say that you are.
Yep.
Yep. So, yep, we're going to keep going through this again and again.
And again, and that actually makes me think of, I haven't finished it yet, but I've been doing a Bible study by Priscilla Shire, and it's on Elijah, and it's so good. Oh, it's really good. Yeah. I need to jump back into it a little bit more consistently. But the parts I've gone through so far are like so good, and it's talk. I mean, obviously, if you know his story, but, you know, the process that he had to go through before he got to Mount Carmel, you know, like, because everybody know, if you know Elijah, that's the moment you think of is Mount Carmel, right? But you don't pay attention to the years before that moment, you know, and I'm just like, whoa, I never thought about it. I mean, yes, I've read through the Bible but a couple of times and stuff, and I've been a part of studies that kind of touched on Elijah before, but it was never from like literally verse one of Elijah all the way through, you know, and like diving deep into his story and how God, you know, really worked things out. I mean, providing for him.
How he threw a temper tantrum in the middle of the desert.
Yes.
I might as well die. Might as well just lay down here and die.
Exactly. Oh, you know,
Elijah, I've been there. My man.
Same. But, you know, it's just, it's amazing. Like how, I mean, obviously we know the story of like how God provided for the Israelites in the desert with the manna, right? But how he provided for Elijah with a bird that was technically unclean.
Yeah.
What?
Yep.
You know, and to be sitting there out in the middle of nowhere next to this little creek, you know, and just trusting God's going to bring you something. And then here shows up this bird that's unclean that I'm not supposed to touch or do anything with. But this is how I'm being provided for. I don't even know what I would have done if I was Elijah. You know what I'm saying? But like, he had faith and he knew that he was going to be there until a specific moment that God was going to say, okay, now you need to move, you know? Yeah, I need to really finish this study.
So good.
So good. Anyway, I could rant for hours.
I mean, I probably could too. You're probably exhausted from all these conversations.
I am, but it's like so, I have so much energy at the same time. It's just so crazy that like if I'm in between, I'm like, okay, you know, right? Yeah. But as soon as I sit down in this chair, I'm like, let's go. But I had one of the ladies take some of her time earlier and we just prayed. And that was in and of itself amazing. I'm like, I knew I needed it, but until she started praying, it didn't sit. It hit me that I was like, yeah, you really needed her to just sit here and pray for you right now. And that was so special. And I was like, oh, can you do it again?
Tiffany, I love how God is using you and then also like meeting you in this.
Yes, it's
being
great.
To obey him. And then he's showing you more of himself. And mm-hmm. So cool.
Yeah. I don't think I touched on this with you. I think I did earlier. So my word for this year is faith. And has it been a year of faith? You know, and yeah, with this in and of itself, it's like, it's just another step in that process that I've been through this so far this year. And yeah, I'm just like, okay, God, I'm going to keep on walking it because I don't know where we're going with it, but we're going. Hey, thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the stories and the perspectives that were shared in this episode. Please share it with a friend whose dating life might need some help. Wink, wink. If you want to connect with me on social media, you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at @anapiffwithtiff. I really hope to see you there. There are multiple ways that you can support my show. You can pray for me, rate, review, and share any episode that you love. Or you can even financially contribute by going to patreon.com/anepiphanywithtiffany. Until next time, I'm Tiffany, and I hope you just had an epiphany.